Since the U.S. accused Iran of financing a plot to kill the Saudi envoy in Washington, questions about the accuracy of this claim have been growing by the day. Now, Iran wants an official apology from the U.S. for its violation of international law. Stay with News Analysis for more.
Iran has handed a memo to the Swiss embassy in Tehran, demanding an official apology from the U.S. for claiming that Tehran planned to kill the Saudi ambassador to Washington. The memo says the accusation violates the international law. Washington has yet to comment. The U.S. says it's arrested an Iranian-American for involvement in the alleged conspiracy to assassinate the Saudi envoy in the U.S. Washington claims that Mansour Arab Sayar, who is held responsible for the plan, was linked to Iran. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder earlier said Arab Sayar had confessed to involvement in the plot.
The complaint also states that in the days since the defendant's arrest, he has confessed to his participation in the alleged plot, as well as provided other valuable information about elements of the Iranian government's role in it.
However, the Iranian-American pleaded not guilty to all charges in a New York court.
The U.S. Department of Justice has earned a reputation in recent years for a level of both corruption and incompetence that is really frightening. Now, this has been very big news here in the United States since the day of the announcement. So I think that you're going to see an attempt, despite this not guilty plea, to ram this case forward.
Iran has categorically rejected the U.S. allegation as a scenario to distract the American public opinion from anti-Wall Street demonstrations across the U.S. Analysts have also cast doubt on the authenticity of Washington's accusations.
People have greeted this whole story with great skepticism from the very beginning. And the skepticism has come from all sides of the political spectrum in the United States. One prominent TV analyst, a former judge, basically said that the whole thing smelled like a cross between an FBI sting operation and a Marx Brothers comedy.
Others say Washington sought to ratchet up pressure on Tehran by concocting the scenario ahead of withdrawing its troops from Iraq. They say the U.S. administration seeks to decrease Iran's influence in the region after its troop pullout.
Well, Mr. Kaveh Afrasiabi is an author and political scientist who's joining me now here in the Tehran studios to help us discuss this subject. I'd also like to welcome editor of Richmond Defender, Mr. Phil Villeta, joining us live from Virginia. Thanks so much for being with us, gentlemen. I'll start with Dr. Afrasiabi here in the studio with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Dr. Afrasiabi. Now, let's focus on the legal point of this case, first of all, with you, since we have you here.
Yeah.
And first, we'll start with the New York court where the alleged suspect, Mr. Mansour Arab Sayar, appeared on the 24th of October. Tell us what you make of this part of the entire plot.
Well, good to be here again. I'd like to start out by saying that I have extensive background as a civil rights plaintiff in U.S. federal courts, and I'm quite familiar with the ins and outs of the federal court system in the United States. Having pored over this legal document, which is the amended complaint of the United States versus Mr. Arab Sayar and another individual named Shakuri, I have no doubt whatsoever that we're really looking at a document of treachery, that the entire allegations are frivolous. Whatever the purposes behind them, we can only speculate about those. Nevertheless, there are certain flaws and inexplicable contradictions in this amended complaint that cast serious questions about its credibility and the legitimacy of the allegations leveled
there. What kind of flaws or contradictions?
Well, I think that legally speaking, we can look at this from two prisms. One, what it says, and secondly, the absences or what it doesn't say.
Right.
Case in point, the complaint alleges that the main suspect, Mr. Arab Sayar, has a cousin that is not named, anonymously mentioned as Iranian official number one, yeah, who is alleged to be a member of the Quds Force in Iran. right?
Right.
The other individual, Mr. Shakuri, is named, and is also named as a defendant in the case, right? But if you look at the details of the allegations against the so-called cousin, you see that they're even more extensive than against Mr. Shakuri. For example, it is said that the cousin provided money for the terror plot, that he gave money to Shakuri to provide, and more important than that, he also suggested kidnapping of the Saudi ambassador, right? Mm. There is no cause of action against kidnapping in this action. There is an affidavit of an FBI agent that concludes by saying that arrest warrants have been issued for Mr. Shakuri, right? Mm. But if you compare the weight of the allegations made against Mr. Shakuri and against this anonymous individual, it's much heavier or weightier against that person, right? So that raises two curious questions. One, why isn't this individual named when he's admittedly a cousin of this person, right? And secondly, why isn't he named as a defendant?
Right.
Okay, because of kidnapping, the threat to kill, and the money transfer, all these things attributed to that person, right? So there is no plausible explanation. Two very seasoned attorneys, namely President Obama and Secretary Clinton, who boasted about her background as a criminal attorney in a BBC interview just the other day, have put their prestige and political capital behind it, defending its veracity, right? Mm. And if anyone, any sane person, poses this question to them, well, look at the complaint and tell us why this particular individual is not named. Mm. And secondly, why isn't he mentioned as a defendant in the case, right? That leads only to one conclusion, that we are dealing with a fictitious character and altogether a fictitious plot. Mm. Created in order to smear Iran and to incriminate Iran in the international community.
Right, and that brings us to the response that Iran has been giving to this, and that's, of course, the charge that the U.S. has been violating international law and should apologize. I'd like to put this next question to Mr. Walato in Virginia. Mr. Walato, when you are hearing Iran saying that the U.S. has violated international law, that the U.S. should apologize, and now Mr. Afrosiabi here telling us that there is no plausible explanation for the issues that have been mentioned in that court, tell us your views on that.
Well, the trial is for the defendant in the United States, the used car salesman who supposedly hired the Mexican hitman from a drug cartel to plant explosives in this Washington restaurant and kill the Saudi ambassador. This defendant is scheduled to go to trial at the end of December, I believe it's December 21st. So that's when the evidence, whatever there is, that the U.S. will present will come out. In the meantime, we have a political crisis where the U.S. has accused Iran of an act that, if it were true, would probably result in a military retaliation. And yet, as your other guest has pointed out, the absurdity of this charge, this supposedly highly trained, efficient, professional organization, the Quds Force, would hire someone they don't know from a corrupt Mexican drug gang to carry out a politically sensitive operation on U.S. soil is so absurd. But it does create a political crisis that the U.S. can use in order to increase pressure on Iran. If I could just interject one thing.
Right.
In the lead up to your show, you mentioned that Occupy Richmond had been raided by the police last night. And of course, I'm in Richmond, and I got a text about that and went down to the occupation site this morning. And 9 people have been arrested. 5 of them are still in jail, although they're charged with relatively minor crimes. They've been denied bail and will be in jail for at least a month. And I would like to ask your listeners, if they would, to email, call, fax, write to the mayor of Richmond, Virginia, Dwight Jones, and demand that these spurious charges be dropped.
Right, of course, we'll be following that news from Richmond, Mr. Waleto, here on Press TV, as we have been throughout today. But focusing back on the issue that we're discussing in the program, Dr. Afrasiabi, before we discuss why the U.S. has implicated Iran in this case, and if we are to believe that this is, as you say, rather just an accusation or a claim that can be proven to be false, before we discuss that point, one interesting point about the court that I'd like to discuss with you is that on the 11th of October, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, he claimed that Mr. Mansour Arabsiar had confessed to his participation in the plot. But of course, we heard that the New York court that he pleaded not guilty to the charges, and that brought about a lot of questions. Where do you think this contradiction came from?
Well, I'm not sure. The amended complaint refers in the affidavit of the FBI agent inserted in it to repeated interviews post-arrest interviews with Mr. Arbabisar, wherein he admitted to his crime and confessed to a lot of things, right? And that, of course, raises a curious question of why all of a sudden this person is pleading not guilty, and his attorney is saying that there are questions about the way those interviews were conducted and the legality, etc. I think what is important, instead of speculating about these things, is well, for one thing, from the legal standpoint, looking at the credibility of the amended complaint. And in addition to what I said, there are other discrepancies that are inexplicable. For example, the seasoned U.S. law enforcement agencies did not even bother to tape record or audio, visual record, the repeated meetings between Ms. Arbabisar and the U.S. informant. After four meetings in mid-July, they bothered to request the audio recording. And anyone knows that the U.S. involved in, you know, anti-terror surveillance and so forth, they would not wait until the third or fourth meeting to request such a thing. So, you know, that's a major discrepancy that is untrustworthy from the point of view of anyone who's mildly familiar with the U.S. intelligence and its surveillance activities, particularly against terror threats.
So when we are seeing Mr. Arbabisar contradicting his earlier claims by pleading not guilty, what kind of scenario is that supporting? Is that supporting the scenario that maybe Mr. Arbabisar was an agent for the U.S., was working for the FBI, was not working for the FBI, was just someone involved with the drug cartel? What does it tell us?
Well, I don't know. There are different scenarios, one of which that he's a patsy. You know, the stories about him having a drug record, and there could have been some bargains between him and the U.S., just as there have been, according to their own complaint, with the informant who's a paid informant and so forth, you know. So that's one possibility that we can rule out. What matters is that the entire allegations against Iran are based on the hearsay of two individuals, both of them basically shady characters.
That's right. Mr. Waleto, you were speaking earlier about the implications that this case will have in terms of tension rising between the U.S. and Tehran. A lot of people have been saying the fact that this plot was even raised was that it was meant to be exposed and it was meant to create tension between the U.S. and Tehran. Do you think that this is rather a pretext to launch war against Iran, or as some other people have been saying, it's not actually about waging war, it's actually about avoiding a war with Iran, at the same time raising accusations and pressure on Iran to increase sanctions on the country?
Well, certainly it's an attempt to increase sanctions, but you have to look at this situation in the light of what is happening in the region as a whole. Now, the government of Libya has been overthrown. And Libya, of course, has the largest oil deposits, known oil reserves in all of Africa. Syrian government is under tremendous pressure, and there's no, it's not known whether it will survive the current upheaval in that country. And with whatever problems and faults of the Syrian government, it was an obstacle to the U.S. carrying out its policies in the area. And then, of course, Iran is the biggest obstacle to U.S. achieving hegemony in this region of the world that has two-thirds of the world's known oil reserves. So I think what we have to see is that the U.S. is attempting to tighten a noose around Iran. The announcements have just been made by the Obama administration that U.S. troops will be shortly withdrawn from Iran, combat troops, although, of course, there will be many that will stay and many will that remain next door in Kuwait. But now it's come out, an article in the New York Times, I believe that was 2 days ago, that these forces will be redeployed throughout the Persian Gulf and that a new attempt will be made to militarily connect the Arab states of the Gulf region that have governments that are sympathetic to the U.S. and hostile to Iran to work in a more cooperative way militarily. So I think that Iran is the big prize as far as Washington is concerned.
Right.
That is the country that they want to neutralize either politically or militarily, and this plot, this accusation of assassination plot, should really be seen in that context.
Right, and of course that raises the question if a military action on Iran could be possible for the U.S. in terms, when we are speaking of practical terms, of course. Dr. Afrasiabi, speaking about the pressure that the U.S. would want to imply on Iran, as Mr. Waleto was just implying there. We know that the U.S. has now filed a complaint to the U.N. on this case, and that says a lot about its efforts to put pressure on Tehran in terms of sanctions. Tell us about that attempt by the U.S., what that means legally for Iran and the U.S., and what do you think, what kind of pressure do you think the U.S. is trying to put on Iran right now?
Well, exactly, you're right. The U.S. has followed a two-track approach, filing a criminal complaint in the courts and also complaining to the UN, accusing Iran of violating a UN treaty with respect to protection of foreign diplomats. Iran is a signatory to the 1973 convention. Well, with respect to the first track, Iran is an outsider. We really have no say or influence on what goes on inside these very flawed legal processes in the U.S. court, which in terms of foreign affairs has shown to be a pawn of the U.S. administrations. So we shouldn't really, you know, put too much faith on what goes on in the U.S. courts. But it's very different when it comes to the international institutions such as the United Nations, because here, you know, we have a legal process. Iran has, of course, adamantly objected to these baseless accusations and so forth. But, you know, there are venues where Iran could actually turn the table on the U.S. And file a complaint and pursue the U.S. on these very fabricated and baseless charges.
Right.
So I think that, you know, whereas the U.S. has tried to hold a sword on Iran's head, it could very well turn into a sword of Damocles, you know, a double-edged sword that could land on the head of the person who first used it.
Right. Mr. Waleto, would you agree with that? Because, of course, we're seeing the pressure increase from the United States. Would you say that this could turn out something like the WMD charges on Iraq, which were later, of course, proven to be false? Will this be another source of embarrassment for people like Hillary Clinton, for the Obama administration?
Well, that could very well happen, but remember, we didn't receive the information that the WMD charges were false until after Iraq had been invaded. I hope we don't have to wait that long this time. The stakes are very high for the Obama administration. If it were to come out that this was a fraud and that this whole case had been fabricated in order to increase pressure on Iran and raise the possibility of war, I think that's something that the American people would feel very strongly about. People don't like to be lied to by their own government, and they know that has happened in the past, and they had great hopes for this present administration, and those hopes are diminishing by the day. If it turns out that this was a fraud and that revelation comes before there is a military attack, I think it would be devastating for the Obama administration, and that's what makes it so dangerous.
Dr. Afrasiabi, speaking about what the aim of this scenario is now, as Mr. Waleto was telling us on earlier, this could be an attempt for military intervention. This could be a prelude to some kind of political and economic pressure. Other people have been saying that this is, in fact, a kind of pressure on Iran to force Iran into negotiations with the United States, for instance, on issues to do with Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, do you think that's the case?
Well, I think that the U.S. has tried to hit several targets with one stone. And one being, you know, the nuclear issue, because immediately after this came out, President Obama went on offensive with respect to the forthcoming IAEA report on Iran and so forth. And there's a very crucial meeting at the IAEA in mid-November. So they're definitely trying to link terrorism with the nuclear. They don't have much in their hands to accuse Iran of the nuclear, so they're trying to exploit this nuclear and this terror scenario in order to exert pressure on Iran and also to impose sanctions. But we have seen after the initial hoopla has subsided, the European reaction, for example, is not exactly what the Americans were intending. So this is starting to unravel and backfire on its instigator, you know. And then, you know, you have the domestic considerations that President Obama came under severe criticisms over his handling of the Palestinian statehood at the UN, and now he's trying to appeal to the Jewish voters and the pro-Israel lobby and so on. You know, so there's a host of domestic and external issues.
Well, Mr. Walesa, what do you think about this? Do you think that the United States is now looking for a way to initiate dialogue with Iran? Is that something that it would want when we speak of Afghanistan, Iraq, and also other world issues? Does it see Iran as now becoming a major decision maker or power in the region that it has to force itself to negotiate with?
Well, I think it does see Iran as having increasing political influence in the area. But recently, I think it was within the last six, 8 weeks, President Ahmadinejad offered to open negotiations with the United States and significantly did not demand that that the United States first recognize Iran's right to process nuclear fuel for domestic energy purposes. That apparently was a break from past discussions. And so there was no response from the United States. I don't think Washington is interested in coming to the table to have an honest, respectful conversation with Iran to work out any problems between them. I think it wants to take the government down. It wants to remove Iran as an influence in the area. That doesn't necessarily mean war, but the history of U.S. foreign policy is such that war can never be discounted as a possibility.
Okay, we're running out of time, but Dr. Afrasiabi, I think you've got a little point to say. If you just say it briefly for us, yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. I think that this would be a very perverse way for the U.S. to reach out to Iran for a dialogue. Having said that, there are a number of issues such as, you know, Afghanistan and the regional stability issues that require dialogue, multilateral dialogue, and collective international effort to resolve them. There's a very crucial meeting coming up in Bonn on Afghanistan, and the U.S. has basically torpedoed Iran's participation by these wild allegations. So they really need to stand back from this kind of childish behavior, mischievous behavior, and have a rational attitude toward Iran that is conducive to multilateral dialogue on regional and global issues.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi, author and political scientist, joining us here in the studio in Tehran. A big thank you as well to Mr. Phil Valeto in Virginia, editor of Richmond Defender. Thank you so much for being with us. From Miho Malezgi and the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye until our next program.